Well, good morning. Certainly it is a good morning to be here. Good morning to be with you all. And again, while I'm not necessarily just thrilled that Josh and David are both out of town today, I am very glad to have this opportunity to be with you. The farewell address has a long and rich history when you look at the Bible. There are a lot of people who gave addresses as they were nearing the end of their time somewhere, nearing the end of their life is more particularly. You can look at Jacob, for instance, who talks to all of his sons and passes on blessings and prophecies about them. You can look at Joshua, who does not only one but two, in Joshua chapter 23 and Joshua chapter 24. You can even look at Moses, who really writes an entire book that is his farewell address to the people. And while I'm not going to take 33 chapters to tell you a lot of those kind of things, I am very glad to have this opportunity because there are a lot of things that I would like to be able to say to you, and I have an opportunity to do some of that. And so this morning, I'd like to talk for a little bit about our time here in Tuscaloosa. If you're visiting with us, I'm not the normal preacher. My wife and I are going to be leaving in a few weeks, so you really probably won't have to see me if you show up again. But I would encourage you to stick around, give us a chance to talk to you and get to know you. And hopefully, even as I'm being very personal and reflecting on some of these things, these are things that we can learn from and things that we can be able to apply to our lives as Christians. And if there's one thing that I would say about our time here, that's why I asked Stephen to read for this second chapter of Nehemiah, because as you read through this chapter, you see a story where God's hand is all throughout this. You see, as he stands before the king and is serving as one of his officials, and you were not supposed to be sad, you were not supposed to be anything other than perfectly content and perfectly happy. But the king notices this, and the king cares about Nehemiah. And the king basically says to Nehemiah, whatever you need, I'm going to give that to you. But as he says in verse 8, because the good hand of my God was on me. And then in verse 18, as he arrives in Jerusalem and talks about the hand of God being with him, he understood who was really giving him all of those blessings. And so as we take a few moments this morning to just ponder and think about me and my family's time here in Tuscaloosa, if you take away nothing else, take away this. The hand of my God has been very good to me. We came to Tuscaloosa in 2011. In fact, it's easy to remember the day the tornadoes came through. It was Lisa's birthday. We had not moved quite yet. But even where we were in Athens, Alabama, we lost power for a few days. We had gone to be with my parents in their house because we were in a second-story apartment and felt that probably wasn't the best place to go. And while our dwelling there wasn't damaged, there was a lot of damage even up that direction. We were supposed to move on the 29th. If I'm remembering correctly, it wasn't until the 2nd or the 3rd that we were able to get everything and actually come down here. And it was a time that was a lot of loss and a lot of suffering, and really you couldn't compare Tuscaloosa to anything but a war zone, if you were here and remember and saw all of that. But that was the context in which we arrived here a little over 6 years ago, in early May of 2011. And I think that God's hand has been with us, and God's hand even brought us here, as we'll talk about in a few minutes. And I want you to also know that even though I feel like I'm leaving here with a lot of blessings, I do not want you to think that I didn't come in with a lot of blessings. But God has blessed us. God has increased us. And the third thing I want to point out is that God's hand is going to continue to be with us as we leave here. And so as we talk about these three points, it is going to be very personal. And probably even atypical in a lot of ways. I don't remember exactly when this was, and I don't know if I've shared it actually from the pulpit, or at least in front of everybody. But several years ago, we'd been here for a little while, and I was over at hanging out with some of the college students, and I know Andrew Smith was still here And then his sister's gone from us, and now his youngest brother is here. But they said that I was the least cuddly person that they knew out of all the college students. And I don't know if they were kidding or not. I was very fine with that because it means nobody's going to try to hug me. So maybe I'm not the most emotional person. I know, I think it was Janice who said that I'm not, but when we announced that we were going to have a child, that I actually opened up a little bit. So maybe this feels a little strange to you, I don't know, but this is what I want to talk about this morning. These are things that as I look at my life here, the life of my family here, I want you to know these things and I want you to reflect on these with me just for a few moments. Where we came from in Athens was not a bad situation by any means, don't get me wrong, especially as I move into this next point. But we were effectively newlyweds at that time. We got married at the very, very end of 2009 in December. And we had been there not quite a year and a half. We had been out of college. We waited for Lisa to graduate, in fact, to get married. But neither of us was very happy where we were when it came to our jobs. I was working at a Publix in Madison. Lisa was working as a receptionist for an eye doctor and then switched to another eye doctor doing the same thing. But it was a frustrating experience. I'd been looking to try to get some sort of technical writing job, had found a little bit of freelance work, but nothing that paid bills or anything, paid hardly at all. And so we really were looking for a change. Lisa decided, I want to say this was in December of 2010, but right around that point, Lisa said, well, you know what, maybe we just go back to school and try something like that. And so I said, that's fine. You can go take a test. And then she was doing it, so I was like, okay, I'll take the MAT, is what it was, the college application test. And I said, but I don't want you to apply to Auburn, because even before we came here, I was a bit of an Alabama fan. I didn't really want to go down there and live. So we did that, and we got the scores back, and we sent them to different places, and we're both accepted here at Alabama, but had really decided after a few months of that, well, we probably can't make this work financially. We tried to buy a house where we were in Athens, and then they had basically pre-approved us, and then we were actually getting into doing the financial circumstances and stuff, and then they said, no, we're not giving you this loan after all. And that was disappointing, and that was frustrating. And so we said, well, I don't know what we're going to do, but we're going to make the best of where we are. We had kind of given up on going back to school at this point, at least I had. And I even remember my grandfather, who was having a lot of health problems at that point. We had told him that we had applied to go back to school, and he was so excited. And then a couple months later at his funeral, I can still remember thinking he would be so disappointed not to know that we're going to continue on with that. But a little bit after that, I got a phone call, and it was from somebody in the communication studies department down here, and they said, your test scores are great. Your grades were very good for a bachelor's. We really want you to apply for this assistantship. We think you'd be a good candidate to get it. It'll pay for your school. It will, in fact, pay you a stipend that you can be able to use that to live and to basically make school your job for a little bit. And so I applied for it, and I got it. And not only that, but in moving down here, Lisa had a friend from back when we were in college all the way in Florence named Amanda, and yes, that Amanda that's here. And she was able to find Lisa a job, working for a company that needed somebody that could speak a little bit of Spanish and also do financial things. And so that worked out very nicely that in that first summer here, she was able to find that too. And so we've been richly blessed in coming here. I was able to continue my education even when we came down here. The plan was for us to stay, for me to get a doctorate, for me to be able to teach. And I've been able to do that. And one of the great things about being in this town at this university is that they encourage that in my department. I've been teaching for them for years. And I've been able to preach, not here very much, but in a lot of other places. And I think that that has helped me grow as a person. But the hand of God, I think, really did bring us here. And it reminds me so much of how God loves his children, as we already looked at this passage in our first sermon. But in Luke chapter 11, as Jesus talks about our Father in heaven, he says he wants to give good things to us. If we ask for something bad, he's not going to give that to us, because he wants to bless us and he wants to take care of us. In Luke 11 and verse 11, now suppose one of you fathers is asked by his son for a fish. He will not give him a snake instead of a fish, will he? Or if he is asked for an egg, he will not give him a scorpion, will he? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your heavenly Father give the Holy Spirit to those who ask him? And so as I look back on things like we didn't buy a house, and Lisa lost her job, which is partly why we moved when we did, instead of waiting a little bit later in the summer. And when I got a phone call about an assistantship, all of that, I say, God was blessing us. God was looking out for us. God was taking care of us. Even things that we thought we wanted at the time, he had a better plan in mind for us. The second thing I'd like to look at, just again very briefly, is how abundantly we have been blessed here. As I said, I do not want to minimize what I had. I did not lack for anything before coming here. I would say I came in rich, and I will leave richer, more fully blessed. But we got married at the end of 2009, and we had been married for 16 wonderful months. And even with all the frustrations and all the bad things that I can think about, there were a lot of very happy moments up there with her. And I wouldn't trade anything for her. I never felt like I lacked for anything with her. But then she got nesting fever shortly after moving here. And so we said, okay, at Christmas, for your Christmas present, we'll get a dog. And she has been a delight. I was not a pet person, but I have put so much of my time and energy into that dog. She's still my phone background, which annoys my mom a lot because she thinks it should be my daughter. But Sarah was there first. And our little girl, who was born in September and who's been such a delight, this week she figured out how to play peekaboo. Lisa was playing with her, and she had a towel in there, and Leanna figured out that she could raise the towel herself. And she could hide, and then she'd pull it down, and she'd giggle, and so I went in there and had to see it. And we haven't been able to get it on camera yet because she gets camera shy, but she has been such a delight. And whenever we needed, whether that was something where, okay, we're having a baby, I don't know what we're going to do about that. Lisa wanted to not work after she was born, and I commend that, and I think that that's been good. But our needs have continued to be met. Our department chair, as we were talking about the schedule for the spring of this year, said, you know what, you're having a kid. Here, take another class. I've been preaching so much more this year, which has, not to brag on myself or anything, but it helps when it comes to money. And going around and even missing Sundays with you, it still has been beneficial. And so as I look at my life, I can't help but empathize with the psalmist in Psalm 13. As the psalmist says in Psalm 13, verse 6, I will sing to the Lord, because he has dealt bountifully with me. I've been so richly blessed in being here. And God has met every need that we've had, and questions that we wanted to know about, or things that we were unsure about or worried about. He's continued to meet those blessings. He's continued to meet those needs that we've had. He's continued to answer prayers as we've been trying to figure out things in leaving here and going somewhere new, He's still listening to us. And I could spend hours, I won't. I could spend so much time telling you what you have meant to us. And you have certainly helped to take care of us and certainly done so much for us. And I know that Lisa would pass this on as well, but we are so grateful for what you have meant to us and us being here. But the thing to remember is that God is still going to be with us. And I will be the first to say, I don't know if God has a plan for everyone. I don't know if God looks at our lives and says, well, I want Levi to be here, and I want him to do this. I don't know if it's quite that scripted. I think he has some ideas about it, but it doesn't really matter. I can't ask what the script is going to be. But I think in coming here, we have been prepared to go somewhere else. And I think we have an opportunity to do good in somewhere that can really benefit from us. In Acts chapter 8, after the death of Stephen, the church scatters from Jerusalem. And I don't know everything about God's plan. We don't get much record of what was intended by this. But one thing that did happen is the church spreads. It goes outside of Jerusalem, and that's where we start to see Jesus' promise that the gospel would be going to all of these other nations. Maybe that's something that we can do in a new place. When we visited there a few weeks ago, there were about 15 people. I don't remember. I didn't count exactly. Or if I did, I've already forgotten the number. But in being here in Tuscaloosa and going to so many different places, that's actually not a small church to me anymore. In Meridian, Mississippi, the 7th Street Church has dwindled down very far. We're lucky if we get double digits on a Sunday. And the church at Brilliant, Northside, that's about how big they are. Lamar Church of Christ is a little bit bigger, but I'm no stranger to small churches. I'm no stranger to doing a lot at those churches when I go to visit them. And so maybe that has been preparation for that. I don't know. I know that before we came here, Lisa had never taught a Bible class. I don't remember who she told me to blame for it. It may have been Janice again. But she's grateful to have had the opportunity to teach a little bit. She's helped with a nursery class some, which is extremely important for us now that we have a new little parent. And I think she's even been in there a couple times this summer, basically making sure our daughter doesn't get out of hand. But that has been helpful to her as well. We've grown a lot. We've been prepared, I think. And wherever we go, even in a place that the church may be small and we may not know a lot of people, and it is even a small town itself. It's a little smaller than Athens, Alabama, which I'm very familiar with, and I know a lot of you are. But there's also nothing near it. There's no Huntsville. There's no Decatur. The closest large town, I guess you'd say, is Jackson or Memphis, which are both about 2 hours away. The nearest movie theater, I think, is about 40 miles away. And either Greenville or Greenwood, I don't remember which one. I keep getting them confused with one another. But what Jesus promises in Matthew chapter 18 is wherever his people are, he's going to be there. He says, even if two or three are gathered in my name, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be with them. And in Acts chapter 20, Paul gives his own farewell address to the elders at the church of Ephesus. And in fact, he had originally planned to talk to them a little bit more and skips past Ephesus. I don't know exactly why. Ephesus is the place he stayed longer than any other church. He was there for about 3 years preaching and teaching. And so maybe he felt like if he stayed there, he'd get bogged down. He'd feel like there was work to do. But he was trying to get to Jerusalem for a feast and to bring a collection for the church there in Jerusalem. And so he calls the Ephesian elders to meet him in Miletus in verse 17. And it's a very emotional speech. It's very heartfelt. You can tell how much Paul cares about the Ephesian elders. Verse 25, "And now behold, I know that all of you among whom I went about preaching the kingdom will no longer see my face. Therefore I testify to you this day that I am innocent of the blood of all men, for I did not shrink from declaring to you the whole purpose of God." And we see that the people of Ephesus loved Paul as well. When you go down to verse 37, "They began to weep aloud and embraced Paul and repeatedly kissed him, grieving especially over the word which he had spoken, that they would not see his face again, and they were accompanying him to the ship." But part of the reason I include this on here, Paul said, "You're not going to see me any longer." Well, they actually probably did. Because as we read through 1 Timothy, we see that Paul says he left Timothy in Ephesus, but the things that he talks about, the context in 1 Timothy indicates, as far as we can tell, this was not any trip that Luke records in the book of Acts. I think very strongly, despite what Paul thought, despite what Paul expected, I think they did see him again. I don't know when we're going to see you again. And I say all of that to say, for all I know, this may even be our last Sunday here. I've got, at least next week, I'll be gone preaching. I don't know when we'll be back in Tuscaloosa. But I'm also not going to say that we won't be. And you never know where you end up seeing people again and finding them down the road. And so I'll just say, well, who knows? And if nothing else, we can hope to see each other again in the life beyond this one. Let me be very clear. I'm not doing this lesson to preach some sort of prosperity gospel. I'm not doing it to say that God promises to take away all of our problems. We've had our challenges, but we have been very richly blessed too. And I don't want you to lose sight of that. And in Hebrews chapter 12, the Hebrews author speaks to a group of people that were really undergoing very severe persecution. But how does he comfort them? In Hebrews 12 and verse 3, he says, "For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives." What the Hebrews author is saying is, yes, you're going to have problems. And in fact, for this group of Christians, he says, this may even lead to your death. We haven't done that yet, so don't worry about it too much. God doesn't promise to bless our lives in exactly the way I set out. I'm not saying if you turn to him, everything's going to be wonderful like it has been for me. I hope that it is. God does love his children. He does want to bless us. But I say all that to say I'm not preaching some sort of prosperity gospel. There are challenges in life. There are problems. But our time here has taught me that he loves me. That he loves my wife, that he loves our daughter. He has been very good to us. He has taken very good care of us. And so let us not forget our God. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, as I referenced earlier, this book is Moses' own farewell address to the people. And in verse 11, he gives a warning to the people because they're about to go into a land where God is going to bless them tremendously. And he says, "Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I am commanding you today. Otherwise, when you have eaten and are satisfied, and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold multiply, and all that you have multiplies, then your heart will become proud, and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." What did God do for them? He led you through the great and terrible wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground where there was no water. He brought water for you out of the rock, flint. In the wilderness, he fed you manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do good for you in the end. Otherwise, you may say in your heart, my power and the strength of my hand made me this wealth. But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who is giving you power to make wealth, that he may confirm his covenant which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. And I can't lose sight of that. For all the blessings that we've had, for all of the care that has been shown to us while we've been here, it's really God that has been giving us those blessings. He's been the one who's been with us this whole time. So these 6 years, I can say the hand of my God has been with me and been upon me. And wherever my foot shall tread, the hand of my God will be with me there. In the 139th Psalm, David says, starting in verse 7, where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest part of the sea, even there your hand will lead me. And your right hand will lay hold of me. If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me, and the light around me will be night, even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is as bright as the day. Darkness and light are alike to you. And I think often we think about, especially verse 7, and it seems to be a man who's trying to run away from God. I'm not sure that's what David is talking about. Because I think this is actually a comforting thing. As we look at verse 10, it doesn't matter where we go, God's hand is going to be there with us. As I said earlier, the point of this lesson is not to brag on my life or make myself look good. It's really just trying to do the same thing that Jesus told the demon-possessed man in Mark chapter 5 when he says, go and declare the great things God has done for you. I hope I've done a little bit of that today. There's one thing that I want you to remember too. As God says to the people in Isaiah chapter 41, fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. I hope for all of you today that you would continue to trust in this God, that you would find comfort with this God, and that his hand would be with you. We talked this morning in our first lesson about us being God's children and what that means for us. And I think it's an important thing to keep in mind. He wants us to be his children. But until we are, we can't rely on him for those blessings. We can't trust that his hand is going to be with us because all the promises that he makes are to those who are his children, are to those who have fallen under his love and care. So if you're looking at your life this morning, if you're saying, I need that care, I need that comfort, I need God's hand to be with me, you have an opportunity to change that, to come forward, to be baptized, to rise as one of his children. If there are other corrections you need to make, we'd invite you to come forward as well as we stand and sing.